Good evening, everyone. Now, we're given very little information about Jesus' childhood. There are two gospel accounts that cover the birth of Jesus with a decent amount of detail. Luke's even goes into details surrounding his presentation at the temple. And then nothing is heard about Jesus apart from the wise men visiting Jesus to give him gifts, probably about a year or so later from that point after his birth, and then his family fleeing to Nazareth. We don't hear much else until Jesus is 12 years old. There are some infancy gospels out there which aren't real gospels. They are far from being scripture, nor could one even consider them to be reliable accounts of Jesus' childhood. There's some wild stories in there that you're just like, there's no way that is at all Jesus. And so you really kind of realize that those aren't truly him. And so we don't have any other historical information about Jesus' childhood. And the gospel accounts have one story from his childhood, which we're going to look at tonight, which is found in Luke chapter 2, verses 39 and following. And is the only credible info that we have about Jesus as a child. Now, what the gospels lack in information about Jesus as a child is certainly made up for in the significance of this passage that we're going to look at tonight. Jesus as a child leaves us a strong example both for children today to follow as well as for us adults as well. He was kind of beyond his years in his dedication and devotion there, and we can learn from him. And so let's go ahead and jump right on into Luke chapter 2, and we're going to read verses 39 and 40 to start out with. Luke 2, starting in verse 39. And when they had performed everything according to the law, they returned into Galilee to their own town of Nazareth. And the child grew and became strong, filled with wisdom, and the favor of God was upon him. So here we are given a summary of Jesus' development over those first 12 years. He grew and became strong. He grew up pretty much like any other child. You know, he started out as a baby and he just grew and grew and grew, right? We don't very often think about Jesus as a child and how he experienced childhood probably very much like the rest of us experienced childhood. Likely part of his becoming strong can be attributed to him being the son of a carpenter and learning the trade of his father and helping his father out as well. And then we're told he was filled with wisdom, most likely referring here to spiritual wisdom, but this could also be referring to other wisdom that he gained as he grew up, becoming intellectually more wise in that sense. It certainly implied that Jesus was wise beyond his years. In the upcoming story, we'll see some of that wisdom being exercised at the temple when he is 12 years old. And we're also told here that the favor of God was upon him. The word for favor here is the same word for grace, charis. And so if that it can be translated grace, Thayer defines the word here as grace, that which affords joy, pleasure, delight, sweetness, charm, loveliness, and as goodwill, loving kindness, and favor. There's quite a broad range of potential meaning when it comes to what is meant by the favor of God being upon Jesus here. But the short of it is that Jesus was pleasing to God, and God blessed him greatly. This blessing was probably both physically and spiritually, and with a generally good life. So let's go ahead and get into verses 41 through 45 as we look at Jesus at 12 years old here. Now his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up according to custom. And when the feast was ended, as they were returning, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem. His parents did not know it. But supposing him to be in the group, they went a day's journey, but then they began to search for him among their relatives and acquaintances. And when they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem searching for him. So Jesus' parents followed the custom commanded in God's word for going to Jerusalem for Passover each year. There were actually a lot of people by this point in time that didn't follow that tradition anymore. There were quite a few that still followed it, but there were others that would find excuses for not doing that anymore. In fact, there was a long time in the middle of the Jewish history there where they completely stopped doing Passover altogether. But even here in Jesus' day, there were some that would make the pilgrimage and some that would not. But Jesus' parents were dedicated to bringing Jesus up properly and following God's command concerning the Passover. Now, Jesus accidentally gets left behind in Jerusalem after the Passover as the family heads off, and the parents think that he's with some of the other relatives there, and so he gets left behind. Now, you may be wondering, how could they lose Jesus for a whole day without even noticing? And the reason being is that extended families making this kind of journey would often travel together, and it can be very easily for the children to be with aunts and uncles or cousins or something like that, and you just might assume, hey, they're with them, it's all good. And so it's probably coming around supper time, or maybe time where they're setting up camp for the night or something like that. They're like, where is Jesus? He's not with you. And so now they're getting frantic, right? Wouldn't you get frantic if you just finally realize that you've left Jerusalem, left your kid behind over there, and you can't find him? And so they're frantic. They wanted to find Jesus, of course. They went about a day's journey before realizing he wasn't with the group, and so now they had to return to Jerusalem to find him. Now, the Greek participle that talking about them searching for Jesus implies a sustained, fretful searching, as one might expect from a parent in this situation. And where do you think Jesus was all this time? Well, let's keep reading in verses 46 through 51. After 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers. And when his parents saw him, they were astonished. And his mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us so? Behold, your father and I have been searching for you in great distress." And he said to them, "Why were you looking for me? Did you not know that I must be in my father's house?" And they did not understand the saying that he spoke to them. And he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was submissive to them. And his mother treasured up all these things in her heart. So Jesus was listening attentively to the teachings in the temple, and he was asking questions, and he had a deep appreciation and desire for spiritual matters. It is unclear how much he was still learning and how much he already understood. I know it can be easy for us to just assume that Jesus just had all this knowledge of all these things and didn't need to be taught anything. How much had he received from the Father up to this point? And how much did he still need to learn? It can be easy, like I said, to assume that he knew everything at an early age, but realize he also emptied himself when he came down and took on flesh. We don't know what all that emptying of himself includes. And so we don't know how much he actually kind of had to learn, just like we learned, or how much of that God directly gave to him, or when it what point God did give him direct instruction, or we don't know exactly how that works out because the scriptures don't really explain all that to us. It's unclear when exactly how Jesus received all of his spiritual wisdom. And we see here he is sitting at the feet of some teachers, learning things and asking questions. And then we also see it's clear that Jesus had great understanding, such that the people in the temple were amazed at his understanding and his answers. I mean, can you imagine a 12-year-old? He's sitting there as smart as an adult, right, when it came to all of the spiritual matters there, and being able to ask really brilliant questions and to answer things that are spiritual matters. Most of them are just kind of just starting to learn all the stuff at this point, right? And yet here's Jesus. He might as well be an adult at this point, is kind of the gist that I'm getting from this. And they're just amazed that he has such spiritual maturity and learning here. And so he's certainly grown in wisdom from that from being dedicated to learning the Torah, and likely from his dedication to being in the synagogue and even at the temple each year for the Passover. Now, Jesus' spiritual understanding at the age of 12 probably rivaled, as I said, most adults at the time. So of course the people were amazed at Jesus' spiritual maturity. When Jesus' parents finally find him, Jesus' response was, "Why were you searching for me? Surely you should have known I'd be in my father's house." That is the temple there. And he wasn't being insolent here, but rather figured that they ought to have anticipated his dedication to being in the temple to learn and to interact with men of the faith. And so Jesus operated under a divine compulsion. There was an imperative there that he must be there. That this is where Jesus belonged, where he needed to be. He realized that at a young age, that was where he needed to be. Jesus also uses the expression, "my father's house," which implied his unique relationship with God. While God would be referenced as Father, the use of the word my here really stands out. My Father's house. While this might not have been conspicuous enough to catch the attention of others, it is certainly striking as we look back on the passage with full knowledge of who Jesus is, that He is the only begotten Son of the Father, that He was truly the Son of God. Jesus' parents did not fully understand Jesus' response, but Mary would treasure up this moment up in her heart. And she likely spent much time throughout her life meditating on the meaning of Jesus' words. Notice also that Jesus was submissive to His parents. He did not mean to cause them anxiety, and was not acting without respect, both in being in the temple unbeknownst to them, nor in His response, questioning why they were looking for Him. Jesus was obedient to His parents also, which is an interesting thing to think about when you consider that He Himself is God. He is the great I Am, but He wasn't separate from following and being submissive to His parents. He had to be obedient to His parents despite the fact that He was God in the flesh. Part of Jesus emptying Himself and taking on flesh included being placed in a humble position of being a child who had to submit to His parents. Later on in life, even as an adult, He would submit to His mother in turning water into wine at the wedding in Cana, despite it not yet being His time to become known to the world and openly perform miracles. He even said to His mother, "It's not yet my time," and yet He still performed the miracle in submission to His mom, even as an adult. And so we see that Jesus was submissive to His parents both as a child and even into adulthood, leaving an example for us to submit to our parents. Let's take a look at one last verse here, verse 52. "And Jesus increased in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and man." Jesus matured in many ways. He became kind of a holistically matured individual. He matured in wisdom. That is, He matured intellectually. He matured in stature. That is, He matured physically. He matured in favor with God. That is, He matured spiritually. Jesus matured in favor with man. That means He matured socially. It is sometimes difficult to imagine that Jesus had to grow up much like we did. This is part of what it meant for Him, again, to empty Himself and take on flesh, is to experience all the things like we experience as we grow up, so that He can be that perfect high priest who understands what we go through, understands the temptations that we face, understands the struggles that we have in life. He went through it all, from being a baby to being a child to going through puberty to being a young adult to even death on the cross, right? He went through everything that we would face and more. And so He can understand what we go through. Unlike us, however, Jesus grew up perfectly without sin. He faced those temptations just like we face temptations, yet without sin. Brother's going to talk about that in just a minute, getting into how He's our example when it comes to sin and temptation. But he grew up perfectly without that sin. And He has provided us an example, even as a child, that we can learn from Him. The importance of being around spiritual people and engaging in spiritual conversations. Listening carefully. Questioning, you know, asking the questions so that we can understand things better. And answering questions so that we can kind of grow as we answer and help others as well grow as they hear our perspective on things. He also provides the example that we belong in our Father's house, which today is the church, in order to grow spiritually. Just like He was in the temple, so we need to be in God's church so that we can grow spiritually. We can learn from Him the importance of increasing in wisdom and in favor with God and man. And of course, the importance of submitting to our parents and showing the proper respect to our parents, even at times when they don't fully understand things quite the way that we do. You know, Jesus probably had a deeper understanding of things than His parents did, but that didn't stop Him from submitting to them. Sometimes we may feel like we know better than our parents. Sometimes we may do, sometimes we may not. It just depends on the situation, right? But we may feel like we do. That doesn't say that we can't, that we no longer submit to them, right? We still have to have that submission, that respect for our parents, even when we don't see eye to eye on things. And so we can learn a lot from Jesus' example as a child.